But you don't have to discover the North Pole to become an idol, for this is also the golden age of the American athlete. The song of the day is Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and the fans take their sports seriously. They're still buzzing about the 1908 season, when Christy Mathewson won 37 games for the Giants, only to lose the big playoff game for the pennant to the Cubs after poor Fred Merkel had pulled the bonehead play of the century and forgot to touch second base on the last day of the season. The Cubs went on to trounce the Detroit Tigers from the upstart New American League in the World Series. But the Tigers have a young fellow worth watching. His name is Ty Cobb. Boxing, under the Marquess of Queensberry rules, is enjoying a tremendous popularity, and one of its glowing figures is Gentleman Jim Corbett, the man who licked John L. Sullivan.
When I was 17 years old, I was the amateur heavyweight champion of the Pacific Coast. And 9 years after that, I won the heavyweight championship of the world. And it only shows what a boy can do when he just takes care of himself.
It's an age of heroes and heroines. From Paris comes an actress who captures America with her beauty and dramatic flair. She is Sarah Bernhardt, the divine Sarah. And although she speaks in French, it is her emotion that draws tears from her audiences as she plays her accustomed role, the woman betrayed.
Le souffle furmue imperceptiblement cette jeune piscine autour du vieux charmant. C'est l'âme d'un désir dont je connais l'histoire pour l'avoir déchiffré un jour dans un grimoire.
Bernhardt is for the sophisticated. The toast of the music halls is the incomparable Diamond Lil. The admirers of Lillian Russell shower her with jewels, cover her with roses, fill her slipper with champagne, and praise her as the most beautiful woman in the world. But what does she do, you ask? Why, she sings. Well, you can't have everything. A shot rings out in Serbia, and the heir to the throne of Austria is dead. Just another Balkan assassination, we say, but we feel sorry for old Franz Joseph, who has already lost his only son in the tragic suicide pact of Meierling. Austria sends a sharp ultimatum to Serbia. So what? They deserve it. Austria declares war on Serbia. Old stuff. It'll blow over in a few weeks. But it doesn't blow over. Suddenly, like a dam bursting, war floods over Europe. Germany declares war on Russia, France, and Belgium. England declares war on Germany. Austria declares war on Russia. Turkey, Italy, and Japan join in. And the war fever even hits places like tiny Montenegro and tinier San Marino. It is a sorrowing Franz Joseph, the last of the world's great emperors, who speaks to the widows and children of his fallen soldiers just before his death in 1916 at the age of 86. So that you may understand his thoughts, we translate from the original German. I extend to the undertaking of the Military Aid Society my warmest wishes. May their efforts on behalf of the widows and orphans of my gallant soldiers be crowned with full... It can't happen here, we say, but it does. The pressures build up, and in March 1917, three unarmed American ships are torpedoed without warning by German submarines in the space of 48 hours. 3 weeks later, we are at war. The nation stops singing, "I Didn't Raise My Boy to Be a Soldier," and starts marching to "Over There." The American Expeditionary Force sails for Europe, and General John J. Pershing sends back a message to America from the battlefields of France.
3,000 miles from home, an American army is fighting for you. Everything you hold worthwhile is at stake. Only the hardest blows can win against the enemy we are fighting. Invoking the spirit of our forefathers, the Army asks your unflinching support to the end that the high ideals for which America stands may endure upon the earth.
And we won't be back till it's over over there. Finally, it is over. The boys come marching home, and we're in the 20s, the era of wonderful nonsense. It's an era of changing tastes. Ragtime gives way to jazz. The corner saloon with its family entrance is replaced by the speakeasy. Cigars are out. Nobody calls you a sissy anymore if you smoke cigarettes. A nation works hard and plays harder. F. Scott Fitzgerald writes that, quote, "The rhythm of the weekend, with its birth, its planned gaieties, and its announced end, followed the rhythm of life and was a substitute for it," end quote. Here and there, you can still find a link with older and simpler days. Edward H. Southern, one of our finest Shakespearean actors, is 63 years old as he records this excerpt from the classic Seven Ages of Man from As You Like It.
All the world at stake, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances, and one man in his time plays many parts.
And then the lover, sighing like a furnace, with a woeful ballad made to his mistress' eyebrow. What better description of the man who made the hearts of millions of American women flutter as he came bursting at them from the motion picture screen? Rudolph Valentino, the first and greatest of the movie matinee idols, sings a romantic ballad.
El torero de Mestre Mía, el mezquetito de Tamadrid, en caleta, pidiendo guerra, y al morario me estremecí, y al notarlo bajo del caja, que muy garboso se mira a mí, tiró la capa con gesta altiva y descubriéndose me dijo así.
What tableau of the 20s can be complete without Lucky Lindy? No single achievement ever catapulted a man to fame and fortune so quickly and completely as the epic feat of Charles Lindbergh, who flew a frail monoplane from New York to Paris, exactly 3,605 miles, in 33 hours, 29 minutes, and 30 seconds. The year is 1927, only a generation removed from the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk. But the age of aviation has arrived. Lindy comes home to a wildly celebrating nation, and President Calvin Coolidge expresses the gratitude felt by millions as he presents the Distinguished Flying Cross to a shy young hero.
It is our great privilege to welcome back to his native land, on behalf of his own people, who have a deep affection for him and have been thrilled by his splendid achievement, a colonel of the United States Officers Reserve Corps, an illustrious citizen of our republic, a conqueror of the air and strengthener of the ties which bind us to our sister nations across the sea. And as President of the United States, I bestow the Distinguished Flying Cross as a symbol of appreciation for what he is and what he has done upon Colonel Charles A. Lindbergh.
On the evening of the 21st of May last, I arrived at Le Bourget, Paris. During the week I spent in France, the day in Belgium, and the short period in London and England, the people requested that I bring back to the people of America one message. You have seen the affection of the people of France for the people of America demonstrated to you. Thank you.
The last pigeon released from the White House grounds flutters out of sight, and the page of history turns. The era of wonderful nonsense is almost over. It can't go on forever, even though we try hard. We want two chickens in every pot, two cars in every garage. The stock market obliges by zooming steadily upward. People don't know what stock they're buying, but what's the difference? They all make money, don't they? Put it on the margin, and I'll pay the rest when I sell, at a handsome profit, of course. And suddenly, on a peaceful day in October 1929, the market can absorb no more. It stops to catch its breath, and the panic begins. Sell, sell, sell is the cry from every side, and prices go tumbling, down and down, until there doesn't seem to be a bottom. Millionaires read the tale of the ticker and turn away as paupers. There is chaos on Wall Street, and the Great Depression begins. It's all like a bad dream. The trappings of the 20s seem foolish to us now, and we cast them aside in a search for something new and meaningful. The nation takes a hard look at Prohibition, the noble experiment, and declares it a failure. But there are strong voices that fight repeal down to the bitter end. In the case of evangelist Billy Sunday, the bitter end means hands, feet, teeth, and, if necessary, bare gums.
The return of the saloon would mean the overthrow of civilization in our land. It was because I didn't want our boys to die drunkards that I fought and fight. I'm going to live long enough to see America so dry you'd have to prime a man before it can spit. And I'll fight the saloon from Hawaii to Hoboken. And I'll kick it as long as I've got a foot. And I'll fight it and punch it as long as I have a fist. I'll butt it as long as I have a head. I'll bite it as long as I have a tooth. And when I'm old and fistless and footless and toothless, I'll gum it till I go home to glory and it goes home to perdition.
Slowly, ever so slowly, we begin moving forward on the path to a newer, more permanent prosperity. The old voices fade away, and newer voices take their places. The line between history and just yesterday dims, and soon there is nothing left but a few words, a few pictures, and perhaps an old phonograph cylinder to remind those who would look and listen. Let the past speak just one more time in the voice of author Rudyard Kipling.
We know that when all the men who do things have done them, and after all the men who say things about those doings have said them, it is only words, nothing but words that live to show the present how men worked and thought in the past.
It is words, nothing but words, that live to show the present how men worked and thought in the past. Some of the words are still important. Others have long since lost any real meaning. All are there for the world to hear today, tomorrow, forever.